It is Friday, November 8th, 2013, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. The Sunshine School and Development Center will host Under the Sea, an art show, Friday, November 22nd, from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. in Rogers. This fundraiser features works by local artists and the Sunshine School students. Tickets are available in advance or at the door. NWASunshineSchool.org for more information.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, the Stieglitz Collection exhibits place at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art is unveiled. And the band The Good Fight gets ready for its last round.
But first, the Arkansas Supreme Court is considering a case involving a man whose gay partner is prohibited from staying overnight when his 12-year-old son is present. Attorney Jack Wagner argued Thursday that a Pulaski County judge's ruling violates the Constitution and past state Supreme Court rulings by imposing such a restriction.
I don't necessarily see this as a gay rights case. I don't necessarily see this as something that has to be decided on some big, broad constitutional grounds. The ruling can be relatively narrow, and the ruling, all we're asking for is trial judges, you don't put a blanket no cohabitation restriction in there these days. You know, it needs to be done on a case-by-case basis.
Attorneys for John Moix want the state's high court to overturn the lower court's restrictions on visitations with Moix's son, arguing they violate his privacy rights. Attorney Richard Worsham represents the child's mother, Libby Stell.
The parent's ability to make decisions regarding the child, it's not an absolute right. What's different here in some respects is you have a fundamental right to make decisions the appellant has, but so does the appellee. I mean, the appellee also has those rights, and she has some rights relative to the environment her child's exposed to.
The state Supreme Court did not immediately rule in the case, which has the potential for establishing a new precedent for gay parents in Arkansas.
The nearly decade-old amendment to the Arkansas Constitution barring same-sex marriages in the state could soon be challenged at the ballot box as an initiated ballot measure aimed at repealing the amendment moves forward. Yesterday, Arkansas Attorney General Dustin McDaniel approved the ballot title of the initiative that would repeal Amendment 83, passed by voters in 2004. The proposed ballot initiative would also define marriage as a union between two people, regardless of sex, allow religious groups to refuse to officiate same-sex marriages, and prevent county clerks from refusing to issue marriage licenses for same-sex couples. To get the issue on the 2016 ballot, the group will need to gather signatures of registered voters equal to at least 10% of the total votes cast in next year's gubernatorial election. The group will also be required to gather signatures of at least 10% of voters in 15 different counties.
Earlier this week, we reported that more than 50 Northwest Arkansas schools are listed as needing improvement on the State Education Department's annual 2013 School Accountability List. But the Department of Education has also released its list of exemplary primary and secondary schools in the state. That list included 9 schools from throughout Arkansas. 3 area schools made the list, including Haas Hall Academy in Fayetteville, Helen Tyson Middle School in Springdale, and Marvin Primary School in Mulberry. Dana Higdon is the superintendent of the Mulberry Pleasant View School District. She says the school leaders are overjoyed with the news of Marvin Primary School being classified as exemplary by the state.
For me, as a leader in the district, I am so pleased that the teachers, the faculty, and the staff, and the students are being rewarded for the hard work that they have put forth for several years. You don't get a turnaround like this just immediately. This has been coming for a while for them, and they have been very diligent in their efforts for quite some time. And I am so proud for them that they have reached this exemplary status.
In its 2012 accountability report, the Arkansas Department of Education classified Marvin Primary School as a needs improvement focused school, which the department defines as a school with large persistent gaps between the overall student population and specific subsets that aren't meeting state achievement goals. Higdon says that staff at the school made many changes to raise its accountability status with the state. For instance, teachers reassessed the instruction material in their classes to make sure it was rigorous enough to meet state Common Core standards. The school also partnered with Hot Springs-based firm The Learning Institute, which provided quarterly assessments on the strengths and weaknesses of the school's students.
Teachers were able to look at that and say, I must have really did a good job at exposing and teaching this point to the children. And then if there was an area of weakness, the teacher could step back and say, maybe I missed the mark with that, or, you know, turn around and work with the kids a little bit more. We were able to target weaknesses in the students. We could reteach, provide interventions, and make sure that we got everything covered at the level of rigor necessary for the children to achieve well.
Higdon says the school's after-school tutoring programs, which are free for students to use, also helped raise the school's achievement level.
Arkansas 8th graders showed slight improvement this year on end-of-year reading assessments. According to the National Assessment of Educational Progress, 8th grade reading scores improved by 3% from 2011, scoring 262 out of 500 this year, an increase of 3 points from the 2011 score. Arkansas students scored slightly lower than the national average of 268 points out of 500. Scores on other assessment tests, like 8th grade math and 4th grade reading and math scores, showed no statistical change from 2011 to now.
Though Monday is Veterans Day and many government offices and banks will be closed, the City of Fayetteville will hold a meeting for Ward 3 at 5:30 Monday evening at the Botanical Garden of the Ozarks. Ward 3 Alderman Justin Tennant and Martin Schottmeyer will be present at the meeting, as will Peter Nierengarten, the City's Director of Strategic Planning and Sustainability. At the meeting, residents will be presented with a proposed urban agriculture plan for the area. Speaking of Veterans Day, trash, recycling, and yard waste collection in Fayetteville will not be affected by the holiday, though the city's solid waste and recycling office and transfer station will be closed in observance of Veterans Day.
Mostly clear tonight, lows around 42, sunshine tomorrow, highs around 67, and for Saturday night, partly cloudy, lows from 37 in northwest Arkansas to the mid-40s in the Arkansas River Valley. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me on the phone from Fort Smith is Michael Tilley, who is the editor and publisher of the CityWire.com that covers business, politics, news, entertainment for the entire region. How are you, sir?
Doing well this morning. It's beautiful Friday morning.
It is beautiful. This is sort of the quintessential autumn day, I think.
Well, I'll run to the dictionary and look at quintessential, but I think you're correct.
Let's start with a home sales report, that numbers that came out this week, and it's thumbs up for just about the entire region.
It is thumbs up, and believe it or not, you know, the Fort Smith metro area that's been beat up so much for the year on almost any economic report had potentially the best numbers, relatively speaking, out of our September report. It was the only metro area that had both an increase in the number of sales, home sales, and an increase in the average price. But overall, for the first 9 months of 2013, the four largest markets in Arkansas, home sales were up a little over 13%. And I got to tell you, I had thought that come around June and July, as the interest rates ticked up, the momentum in the housing industry would slow down. But that's just not been the case. And just by way of reminder, our home sales report, it only covers the state's 14 most populated counties. That doesn't sound like a lot out of 75 total, but it represents about 70 to 75% of total home sales. So we think it's a pretty good indicator where the market is. But the one thing we are seeing, though, in northwest Arkansas and central Arkansas especially, is a slowdown in the price gain. You know, there for the first 6 or 7 months, the average price of the home sold was really ticking up. That's moderated back down to about a little over 3% statewide, and that's just a function of, you know, the value was returned, you know, after the 2007-2008 bust when the values just dropped. Well, those values slightly returned, plus we are seeing a slight interest rate tick up, and, you know, as you have to pay a little bit more interest, you're not as likely to pay more for the home, so it is putting some downward pressure. But still, if like I've said before, if you're looking for a good sign for the Arkansas economy, the home sales is definitely one of them.
Big numbers in Benton County.
Yes, Benton County. You know, Benton County has a smaller population than Pulaski County, which is the most populated Arkansas county there in central Arkansas, but it has more home sales. There were 3,512 home sales for the first 9 months of the year. Pulaski County only had 3,425, so that's an incredible number. There's roughly about 160,000 more people in Pulaski County than Benton County. So that tells you the strength of that market, of that Walmart vendor community market there in Benton County.
You know, years ago, not that long ago, if someone had announced they were running for the Arkansas 4th District, you and I would have mentioned it. It would have been interesting. Now, this has a direct impact on the people that the City Wire and Ozarks at Large covers, because the 4th now stretches into Madison. It's half of Crawford. It's part of Sebastian. It's all of Franklin and Johnson. And James Lee Witt is in the race.
Yes, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because I had earlier this year, when we were giving a lot of attention to the 4th District race, I did have someone wanting to know why we were, you know, why we cared. And when I explained the new boundaries, they got it quickly. It's just that they'd, you know, forgotten that it now literally snakes up into Northwest Arkansas and through about half of the Fort Smith metro area. But yes, James Lee Witt, the former very popular Yell County judge, was very popular as the Federal Emergency Management Administrator under President Clinton. He was credited with turning that agency around and modernizing it. He's gone on to have a very lucrative career in terms of emergency management consulting, but he is now in that 4th District race, and it's very interesting. You know, like I said, he's self-made. He's been there, done it, but he's back in the race. It's a game changer, I think, for the 4th Congressional District, especially for Democrats, because there was some thinking that this was just going to be a Republican romp. You know, Tom Cotton, who's the congressman there for the 4th District, is not running again because he's running against Senator Pryor for the U.S. Senate seat. But Witt's gonna be able to raise money. He's got the political connections. He's got the connections to political pocketbooks. He's going to be able to raise money. This is going to be a very interesting race. And he's, you know, some of the Republicans in the race, good people, but they do not have the political experience, the public relations experience that James Lee Witt has. So when we get into debates and some one-on-one, this is going to be interesting to see how these Republican candidates challenge James Lee Witt.
Well, when you mentioned James Lee Witt's ability to raise money, you're not talking just inside the borders, but...
No. Yeah,
I mean, you can see national Democrats seeing a House seat that has a good chance of changing funneling money into this race.
Yes, there's that factor, which is very important. And then just the factor of how many friends he's made over the years who, you know, if they didn't think he had a chance, would still be funneling money to him. So this is it's going to be interesting. And he's really taken on a bipartisan. When he came out swinging, he talked about, you know, his career has been trying to help people recover from disasters. Well, I think, you know, he essentially said, well, I think Washington's the biggest disaster going on. So, you know, I'm going to try to go fix that. And he didn't. He pointed at Democrats just as much as he did Republicans. So he's going to be Republicans probably were not happy with that announcement.
And finally, I want to direct listeners to an article that's on the City Wire right now, a conversation you had late last week with the CEO of USA Truck.
Yes, the CEO, John Simone, and the former CEO, who's now the CFO, Cliff Beckham. I was surprised. They were relatively frank about the company, the prospects for the company. You know, USA Truck is facing 5 years of consecutive financial losses, and they're also facing a pretty serious hostile takeover from Knight Transportation, who has the means to carry through. It'll just be interesting to see what the USA shareholders do. But, you know, Simone talks about what he's doing to make changes at the company. Cliff Beckham, the former CEO, I was surprised how honest he was with himself in assessing that his role in the company. And he even said that looking back now, he probably did not have the experience to be the CEO during the time he was there. So from that perspective, it's a very interesting story.
All right. Well, another busy week in the books. Any prediction for Saturday with the Arkansas Razorbacks?
Oh, man, I just can we start talking about the next season?
We can. We can indeed.
Okay.
All right. There's your prediction, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
Michael Tilley is the editor and publisher of thecitywire.com. Michael, as always, thank you.
All right. Have a good weekend.
Hello, I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz every Friday and Saturday night, beginning at 10 p.m. On the Saturday edition of Shades of Jazz, I will dedicate the first hour to an interview with jazz violinist Christian Howes. He'll be performing with his quintet Southern Exposure at the Walnut Center next week. And Christian talks about his life in music from a classical prodigy to a career in jazz. All this and more on the Friday edition of Shades of Jazz.
In August of 2012, Fisk University, an historic African-American college located in Nashville, Tennessee, announced an agreement to share half interest in its Alfred Stieglitz collection of modern masterpieces with Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art in Bentonville. The debut exhibition, titled The Artist's Eye, Georgia O'Keeffe and the Alfred Stieglitz Collection, opens to the public tomorrow. Ozarks at Large as Jacqueline Froelich attended a preview Thursday and brings us the story.
Early 20th century American photographer Alfred Stieglitz seceded from his craft in 1902 to promote the medium as fine art and to transpose Europe's flourishing modern art movement onto the American art scene. As a Manhattan gallerist, he was a zealous collector and mad about budding artist Georgia O'Keeffe, whom he married in 1924, the year she began to paint iconic portraits of blooming flowers. With Stieglitz as her agent, her paintings fetched large sums of money, allowing the couple to move on to the 13th floor of the Shelton Hotel. From her window, O'Keeffe painted an urban landscape she titled Radiator Building at Night, which today hangs in Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art. The 48-by-30-inch oil on canvas is the jewel in the 101-piece Stieglitz collection, donated in 1949 by O'Keeffe after her husband's death to Fisk University. Per a special agreement, Fisk is now sharing the collection with Crystal Bridges on a rotating 2-year basis. Aaron Jones, interpretation manager, says the collection takes up the museum's contemporary arts wing.
And so these are works that he had collected, and they're part of what we call the Stieglitz Circle.
30 artists are represented in the collection, reportedly valued at more than $75 million. Some are obscure, some very famous. The largest wing is dedicated to the American artists, including 2 O'Keeffe's, 12 Marsden Hartleys, whom Stieglitz introduced in 1909 at his popular 291 gallery in Manhattan, and 12 watercolors by John Marin. Arthur Dove, considered one of America's first abstract painters, is here, as well as precisionist Charles Demuth, all part of Stieglitz's close circle of influence. The European Modern Masters wing has lithographs by post-impressionist Paul Cézanne, Bohemian posters by Toulouse-Lautrec, an oil painting by Pablo Picasso, a Cubist painting by Diego Rivera, and African sculpture, which inspired all of them. The middle gallery is dedicated to the groundbreaking photographs of Alfred Stieglitz, including photogravures, etched copper plate prints. Nikki Stewart is director of education and exhibitions at Crystal Bridges.
Some of his photographs look like what you may expect, but some do not, and most especially the ones on this back wall are very indicative of the modernist attitude towards abstraction that all of the artists in these galleries shared. Alfred Stieglitz did that very likely before anyone else and is partially responsible for the ability to do so that came for every other photographer after him.
Beginning in 1917, Stieglitz took more than 300 photographs of Georgia O'Keeffe, his model and muse, over a 30-year span. Only one of them hangs in this collection, a young O'Keeffe, peering out of a car window, chin propped on beautifully folded hands. Stieglitz died in 1946. At his behest, his wife set about donating his personal art collection to public arts institutions across the United States. The National Gallery of Art, the Metropolitan Museum of Art, Library of Congress, Art Institute of Chicago, and 97 works, including 4 of her own pieces, to Fisk University in Nashville, a historic African-American college, with the caveat that none of the work ever be sold for profit. But in 2004, Fisk University sought to do just that, to infuse its depleting endowment. Billionaire art collector Alice Walton offered to purchase a half share in the collection, for $30 million, but that resulted in a protracted legal battle involving the Attorney General of Tennessee, who sought to keep the collection in state. In 2010, an appellate court decided to allow the half-ownership arrangement to proceed, with one-third of the money earmarked towards Fisk's endowment, a portion to pay court costs, and the rest to care for the collection. Dr. Victor Simmons, longtime curator and director of Fisk University Galleries, who traveled to Arkansas for the opening, bore witness to the entire ordeal.
I think I'm the last one standing in this process. It has been a long time in coming. I don't think any of us could have envisioned that it would be this wonderful. It's spectacular.
Fisk has shown the collection for decades, but in very tight quarters, he said, so this installation finally allows it to breathe.
Traditionally, we would show about 80% of the collection, but as we went through the legal process, you know, court ordered that everything be shown, which really made the space even tighter. And so it was wonderful for our audience to be able to see all the works, but not healthy for the artwork. And that's the other thing about this installation and the partnership with this institution. We know we have a partner who will be diligent and as thoughtful and as careful in the long-term care of these works that they deserve.
Crystal Bridges provides state-of-the-art interpretation and self-guided tours informing patrons about these historic artists and their critical era.
And when we can really start to connect him up to all of those just incredible people that played a role in initiating a modern art movement in this country, Stieglitz sort of as the handmaiden of it all. This installation really brings that full circle in the graphic display and the space they have to really spread the collection out and bring out those relationships.
Now that Crystal Bridges Museum and Fisk University jointly own and perpetually care for and co-curate the collection, rotating on a two-year basis, Fisk, for the first time, has space to exhibit pieces from its private 4,000-piece art collection. The premier exhibit, titled Jubilee, opened after the Stieglitz collection left campus for Arkansas. A very tense moment, Simmons said.
I can see the relief on everyone's face that everyone just sort of took a deep breath and said, we're going to be okay. Everything's going to be okay. And for those who will come and view this side of the story now, they will say, we're going to be better than okay.
We walk over to Dr. Simmons' favorite pieces, 19th century African reliquaries, fabricated to contain and guard bundled bones of African ancestors. The indigenous masks inspired early European modernist art, so were recognized and collected by Alfred Stieglitz.
The idea that Stieglitz and pushing the boundaries of understanding the relationships and the importance that young artists were placing in this type of work. And his stepping out on a limb and saying, you know, I'm going to bring this also to my public at a time when the public did not think of these as works of art, but the curious carvings of primitive people. But Stieglitz and his circle really seeing the beauty in them and understanding the revolutionary ideas that are within that beauty.
Fisk University President William James Williams is acutely aware of the exposure Alfred Stieglitz's gift has provided his students over the generations.
And now we get a chance to expand that circle even more. And the fact that we're able to be here in Arkansas and to share that experience, you know, really helps us to fulfill our mission in an even bigger and better way.
In a brand new museum endowed with a $1.2 billion operating acquisitions and capital improvements budget provided by the Walton Family Foundation in 2011, and a $20 million donation by Walmart Stores allows perpetual free entry into Crystal Bridges, which saw its 1 millionth visitor this summer since opening on 11-11-11. entry into the Stieglitz collection, however, costs a few dollars for non-members. So what would Alfred Stieglitz and Georgia O'Keeffe think about their artworks hanging in an Ozarks museum? Once again, Nikki Stewart, Director of Education and Exhibitions.
When Georgia O'Keeffe gave this gift to the university, she did so for many reasons, but at the heart of it all was the belief that you don't need to live in a big city to have access to great art.
And to that point, Crystal Bridges curators have installed a larger-than-life photographic portrait of Alfred Stieglitz and Georgia O'Keeffe in their elder years, staring solemnly over the proceedings. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
The Artist's Eye, Georgia O'Keeffe, and the Alfred Stieglitz Collection will be on display through early February. A members preview is taking place today, with the exhibit opening to the public tomorrow. Admission, $5 for adults, free to museum members and children 18 years of age or younger. To reserve tickets, you can go to the Plan Your Visit link at crystalbridges.org.
It is Friday, November 8th, 2013, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda, and joining me now is Becca Martin-Brown, Features Editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
So you know that I don't know anything about music.
You do? You know things about music. You talk about trout fishing
I'm pretty much a one-trick pony, and that means I know less than nothing about the turn-of-the-century composer Benjamin Britten. At least I didn't until I spoke with University of Arkansas Professor Stephen Caldwell, and now I'm smart.
Okay, well, can you educate me and make me smart as well?
Because I do
not know anything about this person.
If you have a chance to take class from Stephen Caldwell, he's got to be a fantastic teacher, because he's a fantastic teacher in an interview. Britten was a composer who wrote everything, but all the time he continued to write music for choirs. Symphonies, operas. He wrote The Young Person's Guide to the Orchestra, Opus 34 in 1946 and The Turn of the Screw in 1954. But what makes Caldwell a fan is the fact that he continued to write choral music. And Caldwell calls him one of our guys. He was as famous as a composer could be and still, for pretty much his entire career, was writing music specifically for choirs. I can't own Beethoven. He was a symphonist. But Benjamin Britten, we own him. So he's got Schola Cantorum doing a concert tonight that celebrates what would have been Britten's 100th birthday.
Okay.
And in addition to his music, he was interesting socially.
Okay.
He was born in 1913, died in 1976, and his War Requiem, which is probably the most famous of his choral works, was the first piece of music written during World War II that opposed the war. You know, nobody opposed World War II in Britten or in the United States. And he was openly gay.
Huh.
Which in Great Britain at the time was illegal.
Okay.
And Stephen Caldwell says it was remarkable for the time that an openly gay man had such success and international fame, he wasn't defined by the fact that he was a homosexual. I would say that he got away with it because they gave him, the British royals gave him a life peerage, which is the highest thing short of being a royal.
Okay.
So, what Caldwell wants listeners to know is that he was wickedly smart and goofy, and there's jokes all throughout the music, and they'll enjoy it.
Okay.
7:30 tonight at St. Paul's Episcopal Church in Fayetteville, and it is my favorite price.
Free.
Exactly.
Well, thank you for the education. Now I know what I'm
listening
to. I appreciate that.
There's a whole raft of other kinds of music going on this weekend.
But do tell.
And over the next few days. If you want to learn about Gilbert and Sullivan...
Yes.
Pirates of Penzance.
Mm-hmm.
A operetta of theirs called Patience is on stage this weekend at John Brown University. And it makes fun of Oscar Wilde.
Huh.
So you can go and learn all sorts of things. Plus, learn to listen closely because, you know, the Gilbert and Sullivan patter goes really quickly. That's at 7:30 today and tomorrow and 3 on Sunday at the Barrie Performing Arts Center, and tickets are $10 to $14. If you happen to be in Van Buren at 6:30 on Saturday, you can go hear tribute artists Keith Cole and Michael Culifer do Cash and the King, Johnny Cash and Elvis. If you're in town in Fayetteville next Thursday, Rain is on stage at the Walton Arts Center, Beatles tribute.
Yes, and we'll be giving away tickets to that in just a few minutes.
They are, the tribute shows are such fun. Mm-hmm. They really are. That show's at 7 o'clock Thursday, and tickets start at $26. Or, again, if you're in the River Valley, White Christmas starts Thursday at Fort Smith Little Theater. Irving Berlin songs like White Christmas, of course, Blue Skies, and I've Got My Love to Keep Me Warm. And you can find out about those tickets by calling the Fort Smith Little Theater at 783-2966. Or you can wait a while because a touring production of White Christmas will be at Walton Arts Center starting November 19th.
All right. Well, plenty to do. Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Hi, my name is Paul, your host for the Generic Blues Show, which airs every Friday night at 9 o'clock. Join me this week. We are previewing Earl and Them's new CD, Same Love. They have a CD release party November 22nd. Also playing some B.B. King prior to his Eureka Springs Auditorium performance Monday, November 18th. That's the Generic Blues Show this Friday night at 9 o'clock. We'll see you then.
A few years ago, a trip down Dixon Street would draw the eye to many a marquee bearing the name A Good Fight, signs from Georgia's all the way to the venue that is currently called the Phoenix. In 2007, the group won Best New Band at the Northwest Arkansas Music Awards, and in 2012, Best Rock Band. They gained national recognition when they won the contest I Want My Music on MTV in 2008. The independent rock band came together about 8 years ago, led by brothers John and Dustin Woods. It has gone through a few iterations to now include lead singer Eddie Love, Eddie the Dumpster Meckleberg on guitar, and drummer Robert Lee. The band will play a farewell show this evening at George's, as lead vocalist Love will be moving the first of next year. Ozarks at Large's Christina Thomas invited the iconic Fayetteville group A Good Fight, minus bassist and Arkansas State Senator John Woods, to the Furman Garner Performance Studio for a conversation and a few songs. Christina began the conversation by asking founding member Dustin Woods how the brothers determined the group would be called A Good Fight.
The band, the idea of the band, it happened a very long time ago. It happened longer than 8 years ago. He called me up one day and asked me if I wanted to start a band again with him. And actually, I was sitting at a table, and this is weird, but this is where the name actually came from. There was a newspaper in front of me, and on the newspaper was a paperclip, and inside the paperclip it said A Good Fight. I said, hey, how about A Good Fight? And he said, man, that's awesome. Where'd that come from? So actually, it's inside this paperclip. And so there's real no real meaning behind A Good Fight, where it originated from, but to see it go full circle of what it actually meant later on in life was pretty great to see.
And what does it mean, well, later on in life?
The whole reason why I play guitar is for two reasons. One was because of Smashing Pumpkins. The song they wrote was called Today off Siamese Dream. And the other one was my brother and I. We had a close friend that played guitar when we were little, when I was 14. He was 16. He died early in a car wreck. And so I asked for a guitar that Christmas to pick up where he left off. And his name was Timothy Barrie. And years later, when we met his mom, we told her that we started a band, and it was called A Good Fight. And she broke down in tears and started talking about how in the book of Timothy, it talks about fighting a good fight, or fighting the good fight. And so to see that, unbeknownst to us, kind of go full circle with that meaning, gave it meaning, you know, for us in particular.
Wow. There you go. You guys have had two albums. Are you currently working on a third, or?
Well,
We were. We have all the music is done. It's just lacking vocals. We ran into a roadblock.
Started about 2.5 years ago. We've got 8 songs done. I don't know what to say about that.
Yeah? Okay.
We ran into some opportunities to where we're driving back and forth to Little Rock recording the songs, and Eddie was at a point where I think he was just having some allergy attacks. So we decided just to take a break from recording for a little bit and let Eddie's voice heal. And then that break
turned into
forever.
Here we are now.
Here we are now, still talking about it.
Well, and your concert on Friday is sort of a farewell to you, Eddie?
Yes.
Yes.
I am moving to Nashville in January.
Okay. What will you be pursuing in Nashville?
Everything. Music, arts.
Eddie paints. Mostly finger, but every now and then he breaks out a brush.
A lot of finger painting. But yes, this is the last show with me, and I don't know what these hooligans are going to do, but this is my my last goodbye.
All right.
So.
I know that you guys, you guys have day jobs aside from being in a band, and I know your brother is a state senator.
Goodness, yeah, he is.
So how do you guys balance, the other things that you do in your life with performing? And
it's
difficult.
Yeah, I mean, we use the term "it's a good fight," quite a bit jokingly. I mean, we're not solely making ends meet off of just music. Everybody has their own lifestyle to live.
Well, so then touring. I mean, isn't that, having other jobs kind of was a struggle to tour?
Yeah, absolutely. Every single person in this band wanted to tour. I mean, we all had it. I would say it was designed in us, man, to not really stay in one place when it comes to that. And I think we all wanted the adventure.
But it's not to say that we did. I mean, we've been all over the place. They went down and played South by Southwest early in the band. And we've been up to Kansas City, over all through Kansas, Oklahoma, and down in Texas. And of course,
Little
Arkansas.
Rock and, yeah.
we've been out, but as far as this, a set tour with a national band where it was
being on the road for months.
Yeah, I mean, we never did that. We always wanted to do that, and I wouldn't say it was because of any one thing. I would say that we were very successful in the years that we were together with everything that we did. I think, and that's the way I always look back.
Even during the hiatus, we would still get publicity. I mean, there was that video game thing.
We technically haven't really played in like a year. Until a month ago, when we played a cancer benefit show for one of our friends. But during that year hiatus, we had a song to where PlayStation called us, and they put one of our songs called "Rips Like a Motor" on their new video game, Major League Baseball 2013.
That's what it is.
The show.
The show.
The show.
Yeah,
the show.
That's pretty cool. I mean, things like that to look back on and say, when I was 14 and I asked for a guitar that Christmas, did I ever think that I would be with a group of guys that we'd write a song that was good enough to actually be on a video game?
I am not that familiar with video games. Is there a certain point in the game that it plays, or
it's as soon as you put in the game, it comes on.
So it's the main
song.
First
one. Yeah, and then after that, then it just goes into rotation.
Well, you mentioned a few minutes ago that you haven't played together really in over a year until a month ago.
Right.
So what was it like coming back together? I mean, did it just like riding a bike? I mean, it's just natural. I mean,
oh yeah, totally. We didn't even practice. I think they actually practiced without me one time.
No, okay. Let's clarify this.
Okay.
We were supposed to practice, and we all showed up, and Eddie Love was conveniently not there. But we went on and played anyway. We nailed it. It was actually a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's good.
So yeah, it's like getting right back on a bike.
Yeah.
We had practice last night. We were practicing this week up at Core Brewery in Springdale, which is some of the things we have going on Friday. So we're having Sean Marriott, who's our original drummer. He's going to come in. He's playing a couple songs with us. Christian Sanchez out of Tulsa, which he was our latest drummer. He's coming in. Brothers playing bass again. Jake Norton, who's now playing bass with us, he's playing as well. So when we all kind of showed up last night, having Sean get on drums and Rob's playing drums too. Yeah, it was just, it's family. It always has been. There's quarrels and all that kind of stuff, but where isn't there?
It's a good fight.
I saw a flyer that said, you know, going back to where it all began, something to that effect. So were some of your very first shows at George's?
Yeah. I think the first three, maybe. Yeah. And magically, we sold out the front stage of George's, our very first show ever.
Yeah, we...
That was it. I don't know.
We made a video. We put a camera on a tripod, two cameras on tripods, and we're at practice. And we just filmed ourselves playing these songs. And so we sent it over to Brian Crown, because that was the only place we wanted to play, was at George's. So he saw it on Tuesday, responded to me on Wednesday, and he said, how about next Saturday? You guys play, and had some pretty big bands that were playing that night, too. And that was our first show, and yeah, like Eddie said, we packed it out first night, and yeah, that was a good night.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Eddie kind of said, you know, he's off to Nashville, and he's not really sure what's in store for the rest of a good fight. I mean, can you guys speak to what's in store?
Well, I mean, I'll just go ahead and say it. I think without Eddie Love, I mean, he's pretty much signature of the whole band, so that may, it may well, well, you can put a fork in her, she'll probably be done after that.
To actually see the end of something after 8 years, you know, it's a relationship. So it's sad. I mean, there's not a single bone in my body that's happy about it, except for the fact that we're all musicians and we're all artists, and I know that we're all going to be okay and we're all going to start something else. I don't know what it's going to be, but I'm excited. I would say after the show, I think I'll be able to answer if I'll be happy.
Well, I know we're missing your brother John mm-hmm. for bass, and but I know you brought a couple of guitars. Can you play something for us?
I'd love to.
Yeah, that sounds fun. Okay. We love playing acoustic. Actually, we most of the practice was at the end when we didn't have a practice space, just because we were going so long in between songs. We were just doing it in my living room, acoustic.
Well, Eddie kind of giggled, and that one gave a funny look. So.
Well, that's
our songs. Our songs are funny to me acoustically. That's why I don't, because they're very loud, and I don't know. They're very loud, and they just it playing them acoustic is just funny to me. All right, we are a good fight, and this is the drama.
Stereo, you said you And is it wise to advise all the words in your head? Roger that, right? Was it something you said? Yeah. But you like the way you always are. But something's always wrong.
Definitely different from the recorded versions I've heard, but I like it. I like it a lot. So, and then that was the drama, one of the first songs that you guys ever did.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And you came prepared to play the one that was on the PlayStation game.
Yes.
Right?
I don't know about prepared.
Okay.
But we did come to play.
Okay.
Yeah, but we know how.
Okay.
This song is called Rips Like a Motor. We are a good fight. Let's go!
Boom.
Boom.
Bam.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us. Yeah.
That was Dustin Woods, Eddie Love, Robert Lee, and Eddie Meckelberg, who make up the band A Good Fight. The Drama is from the group's first album, The City Could Be Ours by Morning. Rips Like a Motor is off their self-titled second album, A Good Fight. Ozarks at Large's Christina Thomas talked to them earlier this week inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio. The band will perform their farewell concert tonight at George's Majestic Lounge on Dixon Street in Fayetteville. Music begins at 9 with Cirque du Soleil, followed by Chasing Pictures. The band A Good Fight should take the stage just after 11 tonight. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Angela Nekarheda.
Guess what? Guess who's back?
Rhonda Dillard is
Santa
back.
Santa Claus.
That's right.
A.K.A. Santa Claus.
Rhonda Claus.
Yeah, I like that, actually.
Because every time Rhonda is on Ozarks at Large, she has something to give away. What is it this time?
Well, we have two tickets for the Walton Arts Center for the production of Rain, which is a tribute to the Beatles. A lot of people are very excited about this. We had a ton of entries, which was always very nice. Let alone do you get two tickets, you also get a CD, and it's the music that's with the production, I believe.
Ah, yeah. Okay.
So we're very excited about that.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So we have
This performance is when, in case you're
I'm so sorry.
Not the person or persons who wins and you still want to go.
Absolutely. It is Thursday, November the 14th.
So next Thursday.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And tickets are still available?
They are.
Perfect.
Yeah.
All right. And we're going to give a pair of tickets away to Marcy Marcy Benham of Fayetteville.
All right.
Congratulations, Marcy.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. So what does Marcy have to do now?
You know what? I will contact Marcy, and I will have those waiting for her here probably at the studios.
Okay.
So also coming up, I just posted it yesterday, is the KUF and Friends holiday giveaway. Always spectacular. We've got close to 20 giveaway items already. More to come, all from our generous KUF underwriters. We appreciate that, and it'll be great fun.
KUAF is supported by Arcom Printing, located on the hillside just east of the Township and College intersection in Fayetteville. Arcom Printing provides printing, copying, and digital output services. ArcomPrinting.com or 444-7711. KUAF is also supported by Malco Theaters and their fan page on Facebook. Fans receive direct movie information to their email inbox. On the web at facebook.com/Malco Theaters to join.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Waldron. Busy weekend throughout the listening area. Christina Thomas and I will be together Sunday morning for Weekend Ozarks at Large.
Mm-hmm.
I'm back Monday for a Veterans Day. And then you and I back together Tuesday at noon.
Yep.
All that for brand new editions of Ozarks at Large.
Absolutely.
You, of course, have nothing to do this weekend, right?
Of course not.
Yes. You're just going to take it easy.
Uh-huh.
Because that is what you do.
Yep.
All right. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Thanks so much for listening.